the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest today is David Field. He's the drummer in the Los Angeles-based band Prima Donna. Their new Christmas single is out on Wicked Cool Records, and its B-side, Mistletoe Blues, was our Christmas week's coolest song in the world. Let's hear some of it now, and then I'll be joined by David for your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Under the mistletoe, baby, that's where I met you. Under the mistletoe, honey, I thought our love was true. Oh, yeah. And by the lilac tree, a new romance was in bloom. But then you met me, now Christmas is a drag without you. Oh, yeah.
No more. This is the Mighty Manfred, and my guest today for our Christmas Day Coolest Conversations is David Field, drummer in the Los Angeles-based band Prima Donna. Merry Christmas, David. How are you?
Hey, Merry Christmas. I'm doing great. It's a wonderful day, another a warmish, you know, Christmas time here in L.A.
Yes. Well, tell me, did the jolly old elf linger long at your pad last night and bestow upon you trinkets and baubles to your liking?
Well, actually, I'm pretty selfish. I always open my presents early. I always like to know what I'm getting. So, yeah, I'm very happy with all my gifts this year.
Oh, so do you open stuff up on Christmas Eve?
Yeah, Christmas Eve. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's not just when a package arrives. You wait at least to Christmas Eve.
Well, me for a pack, I just open it. I'm pretty sure I know what I'm going to get. So I'm just like, yeah, you know what? There's no need to wrap it for me. I'll just take it as is. So.
Well, what's the favorite thing that you got this year for Christmas?
For me, I always like jackets. I just get a new jacket probably every year. I got a new denim jacket this year. Last year, I got a leather jacket. So I'm just happy with jackets pretty much.
And when you say a denim jacket, I think a jean jacket, right?
Yeah, jean jacket, yeah.
And is it blue?
It is actually this year. I switched from my normal black every year to I got a blue one this year.
Well, I'm glad to see that, you got rotating in the colors there. Yeah. On a more serious note, the pandemic certainly makes the holiday unusual this time around. How are you spending it?
Just me and my wife and our dogs. Usually my parents come to stay with me, but they're very serious about the pandemic. They live down in Baja, Mexico. Mm-hmm. So for them to get over here, it's a little bit of a hassle. So we decided to everyone just kind of stay where they were this year. And we'll probably do a Zoom meeting, just say hi to everybody. My brother lives in the Valley too, but he's being very safe with his girlfriend. So we'll just be very low-key Christmas this year.
Well, I'm hoping by what you've described that your family and friends have remained healthy over this past year.
Yeah, I've been lucky. A few of my friends have gotten tested positive, but they haven't gotten too sick. So I'm very, grateful for that. My wife's actually a nurse and she works down at Cedars-Sinai down in Beverly Hills. So she's been working on the COVID unit. So, we've been very lucky that none of us have gotten sick here. So, all of our friends that she works with have all been healthy so far. So we're very thankful for that.
Well, your wife. So she, how is she doing mentally and stuff dealing with all this?
She's okay. It's getting pretty crazy, especially right now. But she's staying strong. She takes her days off when she needs it. They've been very lenient with the sick time. So like they don't want to overwork them too much, but you know, it's kind of unavoidable at this point. The ICU is so packed right now, you know?
Oh, please give her our best.
I will, for sure.
Now, what's like your earliest Christmas memory?
It's weird enough. When I was really, really young, it snowed around Christmas in the Valley, which is unheard of, right? But like, I just remember like walking out. I don't think it was actually on Christmas, but it was definitely around Christmas time because we already had the Christmas lights up. But I must have been like maybe two or three. But like, I don't know if I actually remember it or everyone talks about it so much that I remember it. But you know, I do recall going outside and there was a little bit of snow on our grass. So, you know, that's very rare for the Valley. So I remember that quite fondly. And then just, you know, going to visit my family. We're a big family. So we'd always go to like, I have a lot of family Redondo Beach. So we'd always go down there and like all the cousins and all the, you know, aunts and uncles would all stay in the house, you know, very typical, you know, Christmas. And then, yeah, Christmas Eve, we all open our presents instead of Christmas Day.
So what, you know, my mom was German and I know in Germany, the, whatever the tradition is to open gifts on Christmas Eve and then Christmas Day is, I think, typically would be more of a religious holiday, you know, and then the day after Christmas, everybody's visiting family. How does that opening Christmas gifts on Christmas Eve, how does that work as your family tradition?
I'm not sure exactly. I always just thought it's because I had so many cousins that it was hard to make all the kids wait till the morning, you know? Like, that's just what I always figured. And then when I met other people who did the same thing, just like, yeah, it's what we do. And I don't know. I never really thought of it. It's just the way it was when growing up. So just how we did it.
So did Santa ever bring you drums?
I can't say that he brought me a whole drum set. I got to thank my parents for that when I was a kid. And then I did get a really nice conga one year for us. It was a 71 Slingerland drum. And it was just the one single drum. But like that one year, I got that for Christmas once. And that was really cool.
And how old were you?
I must have been at that time 17 or 18.
Okay. Well, when did you actually start playing drums?
Pretty young. Kevin, you know, singer for Prima Donna, me and him started our first band when we were in about fourth grade. We really didn't have an idea of what we were doing, but we just knew we wanted to be in a band. It was kind of like, Kevin's like, well, I want to play guitar. And I was like, I want to play drums. So, you know, without really knowing how to play, we started a band together. And my parents were like, well, okay, we'll get you the bottom of the line drum set. I think it cost like $200 for Christmas that year. Uh-huh. And if you continue it, then we will look into, you know, buying you a better kit over the years. And then I just ended up, my second drum set was a 70 Slingerland. So ever since then, I've just been obsessed with vintage drum kits. So from then on, when I could buy my own, and then I got sponsored by Mapex about 6 years ago. So I don't have to worry about, you know, searching for drum sets anymore. They cover me. So I've been very lucky with the drum sets.
Wow, then that's all really cool. So your parents got you this bottom end kit to initially. Did they ever wish that you had taken like clarinet instead or some other instrument?
No, my dad is a percussionist. He always wanted to be a musician. Well, he was a musician growing up. He always wanted to be a famous musician. So they had no problem pushing me or like encouraging me to keep playing. They've always been really huge supporters of me.
Wow, that's terrific.
Yeah.
Is there, so you wanted to play drums early on there with Kevin. I want to talk about y'all's relationship in a moment, but do you have any, like what drummers would you, well, what's your favorite drummer?
I'm a Charlie Watts guy, I got to admit. Just he's one of the coolest drummers there was. You know, he wasn't too showy. He kept the beat, which my dad always encouraged me. Just keep the beat. Whatever you do, you can be as flashy as you want. You just got to keep the beat and stay in time. So like, yeah, I'm a big Mitch Mitchell fan, which is almost the opposite of Charlie Watts style-wise. Yeah. But I am a big Mitch Mitchell fan. Oh, yeah, of course, Bonham, you know, Clem Burke, you know, I love the way Clem Burke plays. I grew up, you know, a lot of rock and roll and 70s punk. So those drummers all influenced me a lot.
So I'm asking this too. I just spoke with John Densmore from The Doors. He has a new book called The Seekers, Meetings with Remarkable Musicians. And he talks a lot. I mean, in fact, I was surprised that a lot of the focus on the book is, you know, space, time. You know, he's describing these different artists and stuff he's come into contact with. And he talks about different percussionists and philosophers and so forth. But he's talking a lot about, kind of less is more, that sort of idea and using silence. Have you ever thought much about his playing?
No, he's a great, yeah. Like I grew up with the Doors and this, you know, my dad, big 70s rocker, you know, that yeah. was his thing. So yeah, less is more is it totally, if like some bands you hear, it's just a simple beat and you're just like, man, like a lot of the 50s and 60s stuff, like they weren't too flashy. It was just keep the beat. A lot of the blues music, just very keep the beat. And I love it.
So his favorite drummer joke is, see if I can remember this rightly. It's, how can you tell which side of the stage is leaning?
please tell me.
Whichever side of the drummer's mouth the drool is coming out of.
I haven't heard that one, but that's a pretty good one.
Well, would you like to hear my favorite one?
Let's hear it for sure.
Okay. What do you say to a drummer in a three-piece suit?
What?
Will the defendant please rise?
Oh, that's pretty good.
Like that one? Pretty good, huh?
I like that one, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite drummer jokes?
No, not really. I tend to shy away from drummer jokes. I like, you know, the lead singer jokes and the bass
jokes. Do you have one of those handy?
No, I cannot. It's too early. I can't think off the top of my head.
Right. Well, when I first spoke with your guitarist, Kevin Preston, you mentioned him a moment ago. Well, we spoke a couple of years ago, and he told me that you and him and also keyboardist, sax player Aaron Milton were all Valley rats from out here in Los Angeles area. Which valley are we talking about here?
San Fernando Valley.
You mentioned that you... And Kevin, you said started the band in fourth grade. Is that right?
I think so. I believe it was fourth grade. Yeah.
Okay, fourth grade. So, first of all, did all three of you go to the same school, or how did you?
So Kevin and I actually we met in kindergarten. Yeah. So we've been friends forever. And then when we went to high school, him and I actually went to different high schools. And I met Aaron the first day of my first day of high school. I met him through a mutual friend.
So you're the link in this Three Musketeers
thing. I guess so. Yeah, I never really thought of it like that. But yeah, pretty much. Yeah, then Aaron and I started playing in bands in high school with another one of our friends who was also in Prima Donna for like very early on. Uh-huh. And yeah, so Aaron and I started playing. Then he met Kevin and then we all would jam. And then we didn't play together for a few years. And then back, I think my freshman year of college, we started getting together again and playing.
So when you first got together with Kevin and you'd say fourth grade, so you're around 9 years old, did you guys ever actually like play in front of your family or play in front of friends or?
Yeah, our first show ever was a talent show at our school. And like I said, I never want to see the footage. I don't know if it's out there, but I don't want to see it. It's probably terrible. But yeah, our first show was in front of all of our friends at school. And then we started playing live. I think like my birthday party we would play or Kevin's birthday party. So we started playing in front of people pretty early on.
Wow. Well, you two guys, you and Kevin certainly have an interesting dynamic on stage. And, you know, Kevin's got a lot of energy, very dynamic. It's almost like he's trying to push things forward.
Yeah.
Speed things along. You're there in the driver's seat, though. You don't want to rush things, especially right. You drum the tempo. You don't want to lose that groove. Is that a fair observation to make?
Yeah, for sure. Actually, you know, having three guys in front of me who all have their different opinion on how fast or slow a song should be, there'll be sometimes I'll look up during a set and I'm getting speed up hand gestures, slow down hand gestures, perfect hand gestures. I'm just like, well, I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing and hopefully... You know, we used to, especially when we would tour Europe, we used to go back and watch a lot of our sets. If people would film them, you know, put them up on YouTube.
Right.
That's a great indication for bands to see what their tempos are like. And, you know, after a while, like we just pretty much, especially on tour, we settle into a tempo. And then after about two or three shows, we got it, you know, like there's no need for discussion anymore. It's like, we just feel it and we can just kind of gauge out how the set's going to go.
Right. Well, in fact, I was wondering if when these things would be posted, you could see them online, you could look to the other three guys and say, I told you so.
Oh yeah, that definitely happens. You know, we like to give each other a hard time after the show. So we'll be like, oh, see, I told you, perfect, you know.
Well, this dynamic between yourself and Kevin, I mean, is that reflective of your personalities off stage? Is he more impulsive? Are you more reserved or not?
Weirdly enough, I feel like off stage, Kevin's a very calm, you know, level-headed guy. You know, on stage, he goes crazy. You know, he's all over the place. But off stage, you know, he's very calm. And then me, I think I feel like I like to be a little more of the reckless one. Nothing too reckless, but like I'm more spontaneous. You know, if we hang out, it's better with the rest of the guys if we plan stuff out. But if someone calls me up and wants to do something, I'm usually totally down to do it. So yeah, it's kind of a little opposite off outside of the stage, but you know, Kevin is still very much so, you know, he gets us together, you know, he wants to do this, you know, let's try this, you know, he's very much that guy in the band as well.
Well, our coolest song in the world this week is the B-side to your new single out on Wicked Cool Records. The B-side is Mistletoe Blues. I could certainly see the King crooning it on the Elvis Christmas album.
Yeah, definitely.
So did Kevin write the song?
Yes, he wrote Mistletoe Blues. We knew we wanted to do a Christmas song. Well, we had the B-side we released, A-side, Give Me Christmas. I believe that was released last year.
Yeah, that's right.
So we knew we wanted to do a split 7-inch, you know, A-side, B-side with Wicked Cool. We knew we wanted to put out something this year. And quarantine happened, you know? And we were pretty strict with each other. Like, you know, we didn't really get together that much. We rehearsed. I have a studio at my house. We rehearsed here and I don't think I saw any of the guys for 4 or 5 months, you know? We talk on the phone. Kevin lives like 3 blocks away from me. And, you know, we hang out outside or, you know, I'd walk over and we just talk outside of his house, but there was never getting into a room with each other. So that was a little, you know, it was very different for us to write and record a song that way. So we had some ideas before quarantine, but then it hit and then it kind of went radio silence as far as music. There was so much going on in the world, like, you know, we were thinking, who are we to put out something right now? But after a while, Kevin, you know, he threw the song at us and then like, we loved it. Me and Adam recorded our tracks on an iPhone, sent them over. And then he sent them to Aaron. Aaron recorded some stuff on that track. And then it went to Kevin. And then we had a full demo, which we thought sounded great. So within a few weeks, we booked some recording time. It was all, you know, separate. We all went in separately. Very strange as well to record like that.
Yeah.
But it came together really well. We did it with Bruce at Unison Studios here in the Valley, which was, you know, it's great to have a really great studio in the Valley that we can drive 5 minutes to, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And so when you were going in and doing the tracks, and normally you guys are recording live in the studio and then you know, keep the basic tracks of the drums and maybe the bass, and then everybody overdubs their parts later on. Is that the normal routine?
Yeah, we go in. Our routine was, we usually played, you know, we still played a click track, so we play it live a few times all together.
Yeah.
And then usually it's me and Adam. We do drum and bass together. And then, you know, Kevin and Aaron are always in the control room. You know, we do our thing. We go out. Kevin goes in, does his thing. We're in the control room. It's just, it was very different. Like, I didn't see Aaron at all during this process. I saw Kevin maybe once. And then the only one I saw in the studio was Adam, but he was in a different room recording.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So, but luckily Bruce over at Unison, he very cool with everything. And he was totally into the whole idea of doing it with us and doing it that way.
Yeah.
And we did a great job. Like, we're really happy with the way the record came out.
Yeah, I love the sound on there. I mentioned, of course, the Elvis thing. Do you know what inspired Kevin to go that route? That route is kind of a Jerry Lieber, Mike Stoller.
Yeah. If you ask him, he said he was at a party last year and he met Priscilla Presley in the bar. And he said that kind of made it click in his head. He wanted to do like an Elvis type song.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then I don't know, like, we just, because, you know, Give Me Christmas is such a 70s stomp glam song.
Right.
Yeah. So we knew we wanted to kind of mess around with, you know, a different era sound. So this kind of made perfect sense. And the title makes sense, you know, for the style of music. So, you know, we definitely wanted to do something like this for a very long time. And this is our perfect avenue to do it.
Well, I want to we're going to go out on Give Me Christmas in a moment. But let's talk briefly about Better Horizons of 2021.
Yes.
So, right. And we know that, you know, like you mentioned, you guys didn't see each other for like 4 or 5 months even. And had you already been working on a new album, or is that something you planned on working on in this in the next year?
So, yeah, we had about, like, right when quarantine hit, we had 4 or 5 songs we were working on. And we're actually releasing another single, I want to say, in about 3 or 4 months. That's going to be a cover and then a new song that we had worked on right when quarantine hit. So we had those songs. And then now I think everybody is in the mindset, like, let's do a new record. So everybody's kind of on the same boat right now. So hopefully, you know, within the next 3 to 4 months, we can get back in the studio and do another full length. But for sure, there'll be another single coming out on Wicked Cool in a few months.
And so the cover, can you tell us what that is, or give us a hint?
It's definitely a big influence on us as a band. And I think a lot of people are going to know the song. A lot of people are going to love it.
Or they may do both, know it and love it.
Yes, I hope they know it. To know it is to love it, I think. So I think a lot of people are going to be really happy with what we chose to cover.
And so you mentioned Gimme Christmas has got this very glam kind of stomp to it, kind of in the T-Rex kind of world. That was, you know, like a digital single from last year. So
it might have been 2018, if I'm trying.
Maybe, I think you're right. Yeah. I've gotten myself confused, but I know it was, you know, not from from this year, which was paired with the B-side this year. So what was the inspiration for that? Do you remember?
Yeah, we just, you know, we love that 70s glam drum. I love the drum beat. So we were in the studio one day and we were talking about doing our first Christmas song. And then Kevin was like, give me a glam beat. So I just started doing it and everybody just kind of chimed in, like one after the other. I think we wrote that song in maybe a couple hours. And then we wrote the lyrics in the studio.
Well, you know what? I looked it up online and I saw you guys playing it. It was this past New Year's Eve, you did a show in Oakland.
Yeah, in Oakland. That was actually on New Year's Eve. Yeah, that was our last live show, was that show, I believe.
Right. And you happened to do the Christmas song there. And was it Kevin says something like, can we please do a Christmas song? We never get a chance to play them.
Because before that, when the year it came out, we were touring Europe with Danko Jones, and it's a very, you know, rock and roll crowd. So we tried to we did the Christmas song, Give Me Christmas, I think two or three times.
Yeah.
And it went over really well. But after a while, like, it wasn't exactly Christmas time yet. this isn't really going to work. So we played a couple shows headlining and then in Europe, and then we did it then. And people seemed to really be into it. The digital single was selling really well. So we knew we had to press it on vinyl for sure.
Excellent. Well, David, thank you so much for taking time out of your Christmas day to chat with me on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you. My pleasure. And Merry Christmas to you and to all the listeners out there.
Right. I was going to say merriest of Christmases to you and yours and the happiest of New Year's.
Thank you. You too. And hopefully next year is definitely going to be better. I just, you know, it has to be. It will
absolutely
be clear.
Well, let's hear that A-side now. Here's Prima Donna with Gimme Christmas in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Gimme Christmas from Prima Donna here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. The song is the A-side to their recent Christmas single out on Wicked Cool Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's drummer, David Field, for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast. Be sure and join me next week when we kick off our Coolest Conversations of 2021 by speaking with Sebastian Olsen, the frontman and lead singer in the Norwegian band Death by Unga Bunga. We'll talk about their upcoming album. That's your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.